What's the difference between a homeless man trying to break into Facebook headquarters and a Facebook employee? The homeless guy's got a working computer. Hey, howdy, howdy, ho, it's Nerd Roundup. Another week, another bunch of fun, cool, technical nerd articles. If you haven't been to Nerd Roundup before, it is news from the past week as looked at from nerds. We talk about nerd commentary, programming, physics, chemistry, whatever technical folks like to talk about. The goal here is just to kick back and have a good time. I am a firm believer that teams that can relax and joke around and talk about anything can accomplish anything. So it's very, very important to have a relaxed atmosphere in your team room. And we're going to show you how to do that today, hopefully. Today I've got Bob Martin. You may know him as Uncle Bob. Bob, how's it going, Bob?
Pretty good today. Pretty good. Looking forward to a Nerd Roundup. I haven't been here for a while.
We have missed you. You kept saying you missed us, but you were busy. And I, at one point, thought that maybe you was like, look at the time. I've got a root canal. You know, John Kern actually had a root canal. He's like, I'd love to come, but look at this root canal I want to do today.
I've got to do a root canal. You know, there are priorities in life.
Yeah, I actually understood that. It's just kind of sad. Yeah, but the dentist does not have the technical jokes that we have.
You kind of hope not.
I would hope not.
While he's in there drilling.
What do you think about typed exceptions anyway? I don't like them. Stop the pain. What was it? Boys from Brazil. The Nazi guy was a dentist. And so the whole thing was that they were going to actually... Bob, drop for a second. The whole thing was they were actually going to hurt the guy with dentistry. Dentistry is not a thing you really want to have involved with your Nazis. No, Bob's coming back. Okay, so let's hit this thing off here. He's coming back.
Hello.
Hey, Bob. We'll just let you bounce back and forth. It's not really a Nerd Roundup if we don't have some sort of equipment problem. That's
on my end.
I think it may be me. I started up this about 20 minutes ago, and it started giving me a weird echo. I'm like, where the hell did that come from? And I tried to chase it down for 15 minutes, and then I just said, screw it. I'm just going to have the echo. And I started, and there was no echo. So
yeah, of course. Yeah.
All right, so the first story is Facebook-owned sites were down. We got to cover this. It's the day Facebook died. It's like, oh, my God. It's like a million cat pictures crying out in terror, and then they're silenced. It's like,
my cat has cheeseburger.
Yeah, it was a sad day. So, for those who don't know, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, all of their properties went down for most of the day a few days back. Turns out that we all got a good lesson in Border Gateway Protocol. Which is something I looked up, I don't know, 5 years ago and never looked at again. And now it crashed a big part of the internet. Border Gateway Protocol is a way for subnets to advertise to one another that they can talk to other subnets. So it's just each sort of network creates a telephone book and hands a telephone book to everybody else and says, hey, if you want to talk to such and such, I can get you there for this cost. And then it's a big optimization system happens in the back end and they connect stuff up. But as I understand it, we're all guessing, Facebook locked down their internal BGP with crypto certifications. And then I guess the keys went bad and the doors didn't work. The whole thing didn't work. It wasn't DNS. It was nobody could talk to nobody. I mean, if you're going to crash the Facebook, you could not do it in a better way.
I love the fact that this is just programmers screwing up. You know, just a little configuration problem, that's all. Something in the XML wasn't quite right, you know.
Wonder what this does.
Something.
So there had to be...
It was only 6 hours.
There had to have been somebody that went home that night. What did you do today? I crashed the internet.
Yep. But it goes to this thing that, you know, everything is super fragile.
Yes.
And we look at it and we think, oh, these systems are robust and they're going to be there forever and we can rely on them. And one missing comma.
And I think that the one of the sort of common themes in complex programming and network programming as well is that we quickly lose track of the plot. Like the things we try to do to make things better sometimes actually make them worse.
So, oh yeah.
On a related
note, how many frameworks could you say that about?
I'm trying to think of the ones I couldn't say. You go any forum on Reddit, guarantee to you, go to any forum, within the last few days, there's a person typing a question where they did something that made sense and was logical, and the whole thing did some kind of weird shit they couldn't figure out what was going on. So, good news, while Facebook was down, Telegram got over 70 million new users. And one company did a study that said that there were 30% more commits on GitHub
during that time. Oh my God, there's no Facebook. We're going to have to actually work.
Yeah. Oh man.
I can't yell at anybody.
Yeah, I was going to tell that guy how rude he was, damn it.
The GDP went up by 20% that day.
You know, I bet you they're going to do studies, and I bet you they're going to argue about it, because some people go, well, you know, people did stuff, but it wasn't important stuff they were doing. It's going to sort of... People who like their Facebook aren't going to admit that Facebook takes up a big part of their productive time.
God, it takes a lot of my productive time.
I'm on the Messenger. I got off the regular thing. I've been clean almost a year now, man. I'm good.
Yeah, right. Facebook Anonymous.
Facebook Anonymous. Hello.
Oh, man. I don't know.
You know,
may the gods grant us the serenity to accept the Facebooks that...
You know, what's so sad is that I still have Facebook Messenger, and I still send pictures of cats and dogs to my family every day.
Yeah. That's what Facebook was really supposed to be about.
If you told me 10 years ago that I spend a large part of my time emailing cat pictures and assuring that I'm not a robot by picking out license plates and traffic lights, it's like, why would you do this with your time? Seems like fun. I don't know.
Isn't that why we all got onto Facebook in the first place? Is just to see little cats and dogs and little picnic pictures of people out having fun. Isn't that what it was really supposed to be about?
It was. And the feed came. The feed made tens and hundreds of billions of dollars, and the feed destroyed Facebook, really. So this next article is super duper cool. It is related to the Facebook story. This is a PDF file. It's Metastable Failures in Distributed Systems. And I read the first few paragraphs. Basically, in a network system, any sort of system, even at a CPU level, it's possible to have multiple systems where you can reason logically about them, and then you put them together and the whole thing just dies. The example he gives is a database server that you throw some queries at, and something happens to the network where it goes down for 5 minutes, and then you do a resend, and so all of those queries just keep piling up. And then you turn the network back on, and then now it's down again because it's got too many queries to process.
And the whole system can shift into they call it a metastable state, but it's actually in that case, it's a stable state where the dominant part of the network protocol is on retries rather than on direct sense. So the whole system piles up and gets into this stable configuration where it's about operating at about 10% efficiency.
I think
this was an identified problem with the Ethernet protocol way back at the beginning. Remember how Ethernet had this interesting exponential back off?
Yes.
If you got collisions, then the two would back off, and they'd back off by a random amount. And then if they still got collisions, they'd back off by a larger random amount.
Now, did Ethernet use a token, like token ring?
No, there was no token and nothing. You just started yelling. You'd open up your port and you'd start to yell, but they had a collision detect.
Okay.
Right? So the hardware had this collision detect, and if you got a collision, then everybody would back off by a random amount. But the random amount doubled every time, right? So if you kept on getting collisions, it would double and double until finally somebody got in. And it turns out that you could drive that protocol into another stable configuration where it was all just backoffs. And it was just, it would never actually send anything. Backoffs everywhere.
It's like the post office. It's you put messages in the queue, and I don't know, the guy comes by every week. So this is really, really cool. The we had this. There's hardware examples of this online. This is uses a database, any sort of system that you have, and I think they're really, to your point, Metastable can be broken, and you just can't reason about the thing itself because unless you look at the entire system, you're going to get it wrong. And here's a Facebook Metastable failure analysis from the Facebook dudes.
Yeah. So was this outage supposedly a Metastable failure of some kind?
The word is that they're not going to tell you. I think they released a statement. Yeah. Everybody went, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're hard.
I saw the blog that said it was a configuration error.
Yes.
Yeah. We're sorry. It was just a configuration.
Yeah, the giant hamster we used to power the system, he ran away. So we had to go catch it. They'll make up any damn thing because most people won't know what they're saying anyway. This is a cool story. It takes a PhD to develop that. And it's about putting together a terminal. Bob's out again. I'll just keep reading. A replacement for the terminal program. Windows Terminal has been notoriously slow for years. There's a lot of reasons for that. I think it has to do with the GDI. And somebody said, hey, why don't we just make this terminal faster? And, the problem is there are a ton of edge cases. There's all this stuff involved that they've made complexity with the terminal. And somebody says, well, you just can't make the terminal faster. You can't increase the speed of the terminal because there's so many edge cases, and they gave it to another guy. He came back over the weekend, and he had the whole thing nailed. So this is like sometimes I think the problem with we used to call it being educated beyond your natural intelligence is that you begin to understand all the reasons why you can't do something instead of actually making trade-offs of things you can do versus things you can't do. Bob, are you with me?
I'm here. I don't know if you can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah. So this actually happened to me. About 30 years ago, I had just left a company and had become independent. And then the company called me and said, hey, could you come by? Maybe we've got a little job for you to do. We could hire you as a consultant. And I came in and I looked, and they wanted me to build, of all things, a configuration script. I can do a configuration script. They said, why do you want me to do this? You've got a whole bevy of programmers. And they came back to me and said, well, all the programmers here gave an estimate of 6 months to do this. And I looked at it and said, now, wait a minute. This is like 300 lines of configuration script. Tell you what, I'll have this done in 2 weeks. And I think I had it done in 1 week. And that's not because I was a great programmer. It was the culture at the company that had set it up so that failure was so badly punished.
Failure is an option.
That everybody just blew their estimates out like crazy. Okay, you're not taking any risks at all because, boy, if you miss your estimates, you're in the doghouse for years.
And I'm still hearing, it seems like on one side, you got the project managers that go in and say, oh yeah, sure, we can do that in a couple of days. It's just building a new space shuttle. No problem. We got to. Yeah. And on the other side, you want a login screen? That's going to be 10 years. You got to hire 5,000 people. It's like, I think what you learn as an independent, maybe, perhaps, is you have to balance stuff and negotiate and sort of weigh those options because you just can't go one way or the other. Oh, wow. And there was a discussion on this and on Hacker News, and everybody said, well, of course, that guy went home over the weekend and made the terminal fast because it's not enterprise enough what he did. I was talking to Greg Young about this. We have taught people to code well by throwing out what ifs, which is good. You should handle scenarios. But then what we've done accidentally is teach them to throw out all sorts of what ifs that may have no impact. That, you know, maybe a meter will strike our code. What we're going to do then? It's like you have to dial that back some.
Oh, I don't know. We need to take everything into account.
Yeah, this is this.
Cosmic ray might flip a bit. What would we do then?
This is a sad thing. 99% of startups, and this is billions of dollars, thousands of coders, 99% are over-architecting their system, and they're building a system for a million users, and they don't have 10. I shit you not, because it's easy.
No, I could tell you that story, too. But I won't.
So next, we're going to keep on this sort of metastable system. I don't know if you've heard. Have you heard of TLA Plus?
Yes, somewhere back in the deep, dark past, I heard about this. Is this the language-ish thing that is supposedly provable? This is a language that you define systems in, and it does its own self-proving of the system?
Yes, this is a mathematical system of proving out concurrent systems.
Okay, all right.
And so I have a couple papers here. This guy says there are two ways of looking at a system, precise and holistic. I think he's sort of saying that TLA Plus isn't comprehensive or shouldn't be completely comprehensive. And the next article is all the tools, and they've got a TLC model checker, syntactic analysis. The whole idea is you put together a map of your how your processes work using TLA Plus, and then you can prove whether or not it's going to hang up or not.
Okay. And this solves the metastable problem.
It is supposed to. I think the issue becomes what this solves, if I understand it correctly, this solves the type, the interlocking type problem. Like if I have part of this type, you got part of that type. We cannot change both of those at the same time. It tells you which data can go where, but it doesn't tell you how the data gets there on the network. There's 100 other ways the whole thing can go belly up.
I got into a fight, believe it or not, I got into a fight on the internet with this concept in general. I think I put a blog out 4 or 5 years ago that said, you know, I mean, it's great to have tools like this. It's great, but what we really need in the industry is more discipline, not more tools. And of course, I got dumped on pretty heavily for saying
that. Oh my God, no.
What do you mean you're disciplined? You don't like tools. We need tools. Anyway,
that's funny.
Why I remember TLA Plus.
It's so funny. When we see other people do this, we laugh or get angry. It's like, you know, we could be attacked by bears. Maybe we ought to build like a tower with a machine gun that would shoot any bears. And, you know, some guy's building a tower, like, hey, this guy's an idiot. But we do the same thing. It's like, no, those other guys are stupid, but we got to have the bear tower because that's an important thing. That's the thing I like. The old climb the mountain thing, you know, no matter how much the mountain sucks and you have a bad time, once you're at the top of the mountain, it's like, oh, this is awesome.
Glad I did it.
Yeah, hey. We have some really cool nerd stories. This is a concept called perplexity. I hadn't heard of, so I bookmarked it. Perplexity is when you start typing into Google search, it sort of guesses ahead what you might be typing. They're called n-grams. Well, that's a computational thing based on strings of text and how the probability works out. Perplexity is when you look at a piece of text, how much the text sort of matches up with those little strings and how much is just sort of unique. So it's how weird your text is, really. And they can actually use this to identify dementia, because they take somebody who may be suffering from dementia, they have them type a bunch of stuff, and then they run the perplexity analysis, and it can show whether or not somebody, their brain is not working correctly or not.
That's interesting. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I'm not. And it's plenty of math here. gotta have math.
Anyway. Yeah.
Here's a paper that actually discusses it better.
So, do you remember? I love the cannon. Great, we gotta have cannons. With math and Zipf's law right on there. Okay, so anyway, do you remember? That was 5, 6, maybe 10 years ago. There was this interesting paper that came out, and it said humans. English readers English readers can recognize English text if the first and last letter of every word is the same, and the order of all the other letters can be random, as long as they're the same letters. So you can scramble the insides of a word if you leave the first and last letters the same.
That's weird.
Then humans can read it. So, English readers.
So my grandmother, she's passed by 10, 15 years, but before she passed, she had a stroke about a week before, and she was able to move around and talk, and I went to talk to her. And we had, she didn't talk to most people, but we had what appeared to be a normal conversation. But because I knew her so well, what I realized we were doing, we're just throwing back and forth the common phrases you use every day, like, how's it going, what's happening. It was very pleasant for both of us, but I could tell that it was just, she was just repeating the pattern.
Yeah, I've had that experience with people in my family as well.
Yeah, it's not that the, it's weird, because it's not that the brain is broken that we all sort of make things up. It's that it's broken, but yet it seems to all work okay.
At one level.
Yeah, hell, I can't get integer division working right in here. They got the brain can figure out words with like two letters. Shit. All right, so this is one of my little hobby horses. Static linking, considered harmful. That phrase is considered harmful.
Considered. I love it.
So the discussion here is you're building a piece of code, and you're going to solve a problem. You have two ways to go. Way number one is you take all the stuff you use all the way down to the OS, and you drop it in your code, and then you know you got all your stuff. That's static linking. Dynamic linking is you just keep pointers, and then you bring something in, you call the pointer, and you know something happens. Good things always happen because they never update the libraries, there's different function calls. And so the argument becomes like, hey, I know this works. Why the hell do I want to like open this up for a bunch of breakage down the road? Versus, well, hey, things change. You got to get with the times, dude. And this guy says, no, we should just lock it all down. We got plenty of memories cheap, hard drives are cheap, just... Lock, and I agree with them. Just lock the whole thing down.
We'll static link the world.
The world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any opinions on this, Bob?
I'm a dynamic linking guy. I think dynamic linking is pretty cool. The reason I like it is that it makes it much easier to decouple components. Yes. And do hot swaps. So if you can hot swap out a component through dynamic linking. That's pretty interesting.
Oh, and we're headed this way with this next article here. Have you heard of the Unison programming language?
No.
Okay, so this is mine. Get your slut brain out. We're gonna have some cool stuff. So the Unison guys said, you know, hey, we have a lot of people programming in pure functional languages, and that pure functional language has no side effects. And so if you've got input and output with predetermined side effects, why don't we just collapse that down, put a hash on that rascal, and then we can just trade it around without ever having to rebuild the thing again. And so let me finish it, but wait, there's more. So let's assume you're building, say, microservices, okay? You go out, you build your test for the microservice, which takes untyped data and makes sure you can do your work. Then you build your service, which takes untyped data and does the work. The test matches up with the service. You compile down Unison. You got a couple hashes. You don't have to open the code up anymore. You know it does what the test says it does. And you know you can go back and swap it out with, you know, Visual Klingon or whatever you'd like to do. And it's still going to work. That's cool. To me, that's really, really cool.
Well, so I don't really understand that very well. I'm going to have to read up more on that.
I don't read this. If there's one motivating goal behind Unison, it's this. The technology for creating software should be thoughtfully crafted in all aspects. Needless complexity and difficulty should be stripped away, leaving only that exhilarating creative essence of programming. Exhilarating creative. Hey.
Okay. All right.
Fresh spring breeze in my hair. We suddenly went into a shampoo commercial at some point. So yeah, you should check out Unison if you haven't. I'm a huge fan of the Unison, also Dark Language guys. They're doing some really cool stuff.
Cool.
Next, we have I love these articles. This is the article. These are articles that show you, hey, what you thought you know, you probably don't really know. These are the most counterintuitive facts in all of mathematics, computer science, and physics. And it's got a bunch of different things that you might think would be true but aren't. It's possible to play poker by telephone in a trusted way, which prevents cheating. Some of this is just wild. Yeah.
That's what I want to do.
There's a surface that has only one side.
Yes, there is.
I have to look that one up. Yeah, that's a Mobius. Yes. There's also a surface. Yes. There's a shape that has an infinite area, but a finite area.
Gabriel's Horn. Yeah, Gabriel's Horn.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is like good stuff. Two 12-inch pizzas have less pizza than one 18-inch pizza. So it's just stuff you can use every day.
I've done that math so many times. Which pizza is more expensive? How do I compute the area? Okay.
Yeah, but the bastards only have a 16-inch pizza. Then you got to redo all the math on that stuff. So there are so many unsolved problems, which is cool. This makes this a great time to be alive. There's actually a list of lists of unsolved problems in Wikipedia. And there's a bunch of them. Cool stuff. Here's a project where a guy took e-ink, a small computer, and made this wall-mounted calendar. And it just updates. Yeah, it's beautiful. I love these e-ink projects. It's just, wow. He's got the source code and how to build it. It's a Raspberry Pi is what he uses.
Of course it's a Raspberry Pi.
I love my little Pi. Yeah, he's cool. So I got a guy on Hacker News asked a question. He said, why can't we go to a store and buy all these cool little hobbyist e-ink projects? You see them, they're really neat, and then they just kind of go away. I don't know. I have no idea. But I did find a site that had the best of these little projects. And this is on the link list on the site. He's got an e-ink digital watch.
Oh, my.
A smart boot.
Excellent. Yes, we need that.
I want my boot telling me, hey.
Presence sensor.
Kalmanor detected.
I sense a presence.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I will not accept these socks today. Get in an argument with your wardrobe. How to reboot my wardrobe.
My goodness.
Yeah, cool stuff, robotics. All kinds of cool projects. I have no idea why we can't buy them. And the next link is a shame that Greg Young isn't here because he would love this. I'm not sure I understand this. I'm going to repeat what I think I know. This guy took a year and a half. He went through and built an AI that plays chess, I think, at a 1600 level, a really high level. But he had the AI built to teach people. And so if you move a knight, it'll say, hey, you moved a knight and you actually forked another knight. That's a good move. Or you're controlling the long diagonal or your battle for the center is fine. And the idea is that you play and then it teaches you how you should play better. Now, this kind of blows my mind because the computer really doesn't know how to play chess. So is it really teaching you how to play or is it just sort of do this move and here's the excuse for doing it? I don't know. It's sort of weird. I wouldn't want to see this done in brain surgery. I think would be bad.
Have you ever written a chess playing program?
I want to, but I have not.
I wrote one 40 years ago in assembly language, almost a PDP-8 kind of computer. It's damned hard. It's a difficult program to write. It's all... when I did it, it was based around evaluating board positions and coming up with some kind of way to look at the board and generate a number that would score that position. And that's very difficult. So it sounds like what this guy did is he used an AI to do that. He'd come up with some kind of scoring algorithm.
But the difference is that he scores it and then the computer explains to the player, this is why this is the best move here.
Well, so the explanation is kind of interesting. You know, why is this a good move, right?
Yeah, yes. But the thing is that, and I think it probably knows a hell lot more chess than I will, but the thing is that you can make up a reason for doing it that matches up with common wisdom that doesn't actually perhaps apply to this particular situation. So this is what kind of, it's like telling your kid never cross the street because you could get by a car, but that's not really true. Sometimes you can cross, sometimes you can't. You just sort of give them a dumb rule because it works. We're creating systems that give us dumb rules. Well, rules we cannot understand, but we can repeat to one another. The AI okay. God is coming, my friend. Huh?
Is that different from the way people behave?
Yeah, those other assholes, sure, but not me. Everything I do is completely reasoned out.
Yeah. All right.
You cannot reason. This guy's the brain thing we talked earlier, right? The brain has to cheat. You can't reason down at depth. This is the metastable problem. So you have to choose where you cheat. I mean, you have to cheat in a good way, I guess. So maybe it's fine.
Well,
maybe
I'd love to have that thing comment on my chess moves to see if the comments actually made any sense.
I don't know. Hey, I would. It's fun to play. I mean, it'd be fun to play with, and it's open source. So I guess you can. Thing he would be doing, we're not teaching, would be something called kibitzing. And kibitzing is when you play chess, and a bunch of usually older folks kind of gather around and become the peanut gallery and tell you what you did wrong and what you should be doing. And that's where the word kibitzing comes from. So this story, and this is, I think, a third week I have this story. I did not want to get into this story again, but it just keeps coming back. A declassified State Department report says microwaves did not cause Savannah syndrome. They say it might be crickets.
It's crickets.
Yeah, that's right. It's, I guess, crickets armed with directed energy weapons. Last week it was medical science shows that it really is a Savannah syndrome. The CIA's tripled their medical staff. Their lead doctor saying it really is something. And this week it's not. It's just crickets. So it's like
it's crickets. Yeah. I think that's a pretty good indication that nobody knows what in the hell is going on.
That's why it's so interesting. I really could care less about what it is. It's just watching the system of people trying to figure out what's going on. It's the fun part. And as part of reading that, I had never heard of this. There is a secret group of Cold War professors or advisors, super smart people called Jason. Not the JavaScript Jason, but J-A-S-O-N.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, you say it's not the JavaScript. It used to be
the XML group, but they... there's just some super... I've never heard of a Jason group of advisors. And the Jason group says that it's crickets, must be crickets. You know, are those guys, they won't tell you who's a member. And, you know, it's all hush-hush because, I got you could be kidnapped and give up the national cricket secrets.
I wonder if they've put atomic energy into these crickets yet.
Yeah, I was thinking the other day that, you know, we think of national secrets as being some sort of, I don't know, cryptographic nuclear weapon stuff, but a lot of it's just what moves where, when, what troops are. It's very mundane things, really. Ransomware gangs are complaining that other crooks are stealing their ransoms.
Bastards.
Who would have thunk it?
How could you do a thing like that? Is there no honor among thieves?
I'm thinking of various pets mating procedures where there's like a crowd gather. A lot of meowing going on. This is interesting from a nerd standpoint because there is a prisoner's dilemma going on here. If you make a platform or tool chain for helping people hack into stuff, you don't want them hacking into places that's going to have a lot of blowback and the military's going to come and shoot you. You'd be sad. So you put a back door in. Well, if you got a back door, what the hell? You might as well just sort of skim a little off the top of VIG. I don't know what to tell these guys. I maybe should. Here we have the prisoner's dilemma, and this is the Stanford one, which is really cool. A defendant attempts citizen's arrest on judge during assault trial. I do not recognize this court, and I put you under arrest.
Oh my God. I'm sure that went well.
Yeah, the first rule of the Matrix is you cannot hack the Matrix. It just doesn't work that way. Yeah. Yeah, I guess a pretty popular guy around town. This reminds me, I don't know if you remember this or not.
I do.
This was a show in the late 1960s called The Andy Griffith Show. And Barney the deputy had just issued Gomer the mechanic a ticket for making a U-turn in his tow truck because he can't make a U-turn. And Gomer said, this is an emergency vehicle. And Barney said, no. And so if you want to play, I'll play like 10 seconds or so. So then Barney gets in his car and does the same thing.
Bad you don't have the audio on this.
Ah, you can't see the audio. Okay.
You can't hear the audio.
Like you said, you broke the law.
Yeah, I have audio. And there's the link on the page, so you can go see that. It's very, very funny.
He leaps out of that car and goes, citizens arrest!
Citizens arrest! And Jim Nabors was a very smart guy. He was a brilliant singer.
But he
played just a total country bumpkin, and he nailed it right on. He looked just like a country bumpkin.
Yeah, it was Gomer. Gomer Pyle and his brother, or was it his cousin?
Goober.
Goober.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell Goober, Gomer says, hey.
Yeah. Hey, Goob.
Hey.
But you're right. Like he could sing. My goodness, I remember the late night shows, the Lawrence Welk show, and Jim Nabors would come on there, and you got this guy that you think is Gomer Pyle, and then all of a sudden this operatic voice just pours out. Whoa!
Well, there was a genre of comedy in the late '60s, the sitcom at that point, and maybe RFD just nailed that. They dialed everything, whatever reason, they dialed everything in right. And for the late '60s sitcoms, that is sort of a perfection. Don Knotts was a genius.
Those are nice.
Smart guy.
Don Knotts was a great genius on that show. Yikes.
It was funny because Andy Griffith was a comedian. Andy, I guess, ran the show. It was his name.
Andy Griffith show.
Yeah, and so he started the first episode, he started telling jokes because he's a comedian. And he quickly realized that this guy across from him is actually funnier than I am. And so he flipped around and became the straight guy for the rest of the show.
He became the straight man. Yeah. And it worked. It worked really well. And it gave Ron Howard his entrance into our entertainment industry.
So the Ron Howard Opie was, I guess, 6 or 7, and they had a rule. He had to go to school. He couldn't miss school because of shooting. They didn't spend any of his money. All went for college. I mean, his parents, they managed to give him a sort of normal education while he became a star.
Well, good for them. There's a lot of examples of, there's a lot of counter examples that we don't need to go into.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I think probably the worst thing that happened to a lot of people is become rich and or famous. And it's funny because so many people want to do that. And it's like, no, you probably really don't want to do that because that can be a death sentence. So this next article, I love the tone of this next article because you don't see this tone anymore. The title is Jumaine Driven Design. And that's correct. He's making a pun on Jew. And I saw this on Lobsters. I'm like, who's doing this and how are we going to burn him at the stake? Because it's not going to end quick. This is an observant Jew, and he's making, giving a lesson about domain-driven design. And he used the Torah as an example of, you model something, it's a little complex, you model it, it becomes more complex, and it just reaches, it can go to an almost infinite level. And he uses the rabbis and the birds and chickens and Yeah. So it's a good example of how with many domains, the more you pry, the more stuff you can get, whether you need it or not.
It's got a religious override. Oh, I've seen that on my ovens. In the owner's manual of the oven in my house, there is a setting to deal with the Sabbath.
What does it do? What is it?
Well, I don't remember exactly what it is. It's something like, you know, you can set the oven to bake in 12 hours or 16 hours because you're not allowed to push buttons or something. I didn't follow it really well, but I do remember just this heading in the owner's manual, Sabbath setting. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. They've got software in this oven to deal with the religious problems of a lot of their users, or the religious observance of a number of their users. So, okay, all right. Okay. And there it is there, or something.
Yes, that's it. And we just, all we need to
there's do the religious it. Override. Yeah.
We just need to pair this idea up with the chess teaching idea, and then we can come up with a whole set of appliances that tell you what you can or cannot do and give you good reasons why. Sorry, your light doesn't work.
This guy was at Strange Loop. Have you ever been to Strange Loop?
I wanted to go. I've never been.
Yeah, I'd like to go too, and there's always something that gets in the way so that I can't go for one reason or another. And then up at the top of there, he talks about Jess Kerr. Have you seen any talk by Jess Kerr?
No, sir.
Oh, you should do that. She's a pretty interesting speaker. She's done a lot of very interesting stuff. I saw a talk by her about 4 years ago on Elm, and it was just terrific. Hmm.
I'm seeing a lot of guys. I'm not trying to slander a whole slew of guys. I see a lot of work being done where you're like programming a system over here and you're describing a web page that then gets compiled and makes a web page. And I think the idea is that you have a strongly typed system, type scripts like this. You can have whatever kind of environment you want on this side work in a friendly way, and then the web part's just sort of under the hood. Nobody has to worry about that. The problem is that people start asking questions like, how do I put an image in my div? And then you still ask questions in the HTML format, and then you get answers in the Elm or whatever. It's kind of difficult to follow along. So I got this next one just for you, Bob. This is...
Oh, really?
No, not really. But this...
You're, oh, okay.
All right, so this is the enterprise programming language. Okay. Very serious thing. Enterprise is a non-deterministic, unnecessarily statically typed, Turing-complete programming language. It's designed to create computer programs that disrupt markets.
Okay.
I love this. Got a little graph. Bean? The what?
Is this on the Babylon Bee? Is this where
No. This is on GitHub, dude.
This is okay. All right.
And it's got the little. It's got a chart with the arrow going up, so it must be pretty good. Yeah,
enterprise. Yeah. But got a TM.
He's got trademark on like every other word has a little TM on it. But of course, what he's doing is pointing back to people who want to own these concepts. This is why learning enterprise. Check the trends. Enterprise React Linux.
274 TM.
TM, what is it? He doesn't give you any units. It's what is it like? Squirrels per hour? Is it what are you looking at? Is it bigger, better? Oh my god. And here he's got the
excellent.
It's proof that this thing I never heard of is extremely popular. It's awesome.
Bye-bye, Java.
Bye-bye, Java. Yeah, job search. You can look for job search.
Okay, yeah.
The most important bit in enterprise are comments.
Yeah.
There are eight different types of comments. This is a borderline comment. This is useful when you want to restate what the next line does. Adds one to counter. Comment. Yeah, it's all comet based. The next bit is there's a passive aggressive comet. That's a special type. Oh my god, I'm gonna fall off the chair. Interview comet. Hey, this could be done in 01 if I had the time.
Okay. Time to work. Yes. No, this is good.
Yeah, you need this. This is a naming. Oh, name.
Very worthwhile.
Classes are named with Hungarian case. Hungarian case is similar to Pascal case, but is prefixed with one more type characters. A class must end with an interpressive suffix. These suffixes are copyrighted and used in other languages to be investigated by our lawyers.
Okay. Okay.
I'm sorry. This is just hilarious. So the guy, obviously, the guy has a lot of time on his hands and trying to put this together, but it is fun. It's almost as good as the, did you see the, what was it, the JavaScript Enterprise? Have you seen that one?
No.
So I think they start with FizzBuzz. They build a class for FizzBuzz, then they build an object factory for FizzBuzz, then there's an interface for the factory to build the interface for the class. And then
excellent.
It's all on GitHub. It's about, I think, 40 to 60 classes just to read this.
Oh, good, yeah. Enterprise FizzBuzz. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a lot of fun. If you get some time in your hands, it's a good place to drop by. So, okay. Mr. Bob, what have you been doing, like, consuming this week? Have you been watching movies, reading books?
I am reading again this book. I don't know if you can see it.
It is an invisible book. You're seeing it.
This is great.
Working effectively, I think.
Yeah, it's working effectively with Legacy Code by Michael Feathers. There, that's good. Oh, looks like that might have got it.
Yes. Yay.
So I've been rereading this. It's been N years since I read it. I thought I would read it again.
Michael really hit one out of the park with that book. Amazing.
Good book. Good book. So, yeah, that's what I've been doing. Other than, you know, programming in PDP 8 assembly language.
Oh, yeah, I've been seeing that on Twitter. Like, what the hell is Bob doing?
Yeah, like, you know, it was 2015, and I was playing around with Lua. On the iPad, there's this nice little tool on the iPad called Codia. And I was just diddling around, and I thought one day, you know, I should write a PDP-8 emulator. That wouldn't be too hard. And I got completely carried away with this thing and generated all the front panel lights and made it make all the sounds of the teletype, bang, 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 and the paper tape reader and the paper tape punch. And I made the teletype work right so that it would print to the end of the paper and then keep on printing at the end while it was the bell, you know, all that stuff. And then, you know, I got the PDP-8 engine working okay. And then I went online and I actually found old binaries of the original paper tapes for the assembler and the editor and the debugger. And I managed to get them loaded in. And all of a sudden I'm running PDP-8 development the way it was done in 1968 with all the sound effects.
For some reason.
And then Apple said, well, we can't have people sharing code from non, you know, Apple sanctioned platforms. And so they killed the ability to move the source code from one iPad to another. And I walked away because what can you do, right? The gods had spoken.
Yeah.
I had turned it up. I went back to it about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. And the guys at Codia had figured out a backdoor to get the source code in and out again. So I got it all up and working again. And I've been, for my sins, I've been writing a fair bit of PDP-8 code the way we used to in 1968. And I haven't damaged my brain too much yet. But boy, it tells me how much I don't ever want to go back there.
For some reason, I had this vision of the Caine Mutiny with Humphrey Bogart. Oh. And the strawberries. Who took the strawberries? If those of you who don't know the movie, you have to go watch it. It was a captain of a ship who just was obsessed with controlling things. And it turned out the strawberries were missing, and it caused a mutiny on the ship. And that was what the whole movie was about.
That was a great movie. It's a great movie. Humphrey Bogart.
I wonder the other guy.
The ball bearings.
Yes, he had the ball bearings. He was doing his hand. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Well, I'm going to show you.
Fred McMurray was in that movie.
That was, yes. I knew there was another strong lead.
Oh, yeah. There were several. There were a lot of stars in that movie. Oh, my goodness. What do we got?
Do you know what this is?
Well, there's a fan.
I had a call from my cousin, I think Friday evening, and he was like, hey, I'm doing some work. I might have some stuff you're interested in. It's kind of heavy technical stuff. So I drove down to see him. Hadn't seen him in about 10 or 15 years. And he is doing cryptocurrency mining.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And so this is a miner. This is three graphics cards, a power supply. It's got a system on chip controller board. You plug it in and it just starts generating a lot of heat for your house.
Yep. A lot of heat. Mm-hmm.
The thing is that I got it home, plugged it up. It would start, and then it would crash after a minute. And reboot and start and crash. And I changed the IP setting. I mean, I spent about an hour trying to figure this thing out. And heck if I could. So I just finally emailed him and said, Brian, I'm going to reset the board on this thing. That's the only thing I know to do next. He says, well, of course you're running it on 220, aren't you? What? He said, oh, yeah, that's a Chinese power supply. It doesn't take 110. It takes 220. Well, where the hell am I going to get 220? Well, you could change your panel box. I'm like, no, I'm not going to go into my breaker box. And he said, there's an adapter cord. And so now Amazon is sending me an adapter cord that plugs in my dryer on one end
yes.
into this thing on the other.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got 220 in the house. You've got a dryer. Okay. And my son has some of these miners.
Ah.
One of my sons has some of these miners. And yeah, they'll throw out like 7,500 watts. And you join like a group of people, and then you share in the Bitcoins that you mine.
Yes, so they've decoupled it such that these devices produce hashes, cryptographic hashes, and then you send your hashes off, like you said, you throw it in a big pool, and then you get part of the resulting coin. That way you can continue to receive fractional coins as you keep working. So it's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. The amount of energy. We did a thing on Nerd Roundup once about the amount of energy getting applied to Bitcoin mining.
You know, I worked for a cryptocurrency firm about 3 years ago, and I met my cousin last week. I'm convinced it's the future. I think it's going to be a lot of crashes. It looks like the Dutch tulip thing right now, but that's where we're going, some kind of cryptocurrency.
Oh, I think that's inevitable now. If you had asked me that 5 years ago, I'd have told you were nuts.
I had a friend on Twitter that was doing when Dogecoin came out. He was like, hey, everybody should buy this. This is really cool. Everybody should buy it. And he bought a bunch for pennies. And then Elon Musk mentioned it, I guess, a year ago. Yeah. I said, guys, if he held on to it, he's a multimillionaire now. That's just weird. And you follow this what was it, the non-fungible transaction stuff, right? NFTs. Have you heard about that? So it's a... I can take a picture of maybe a video of a donkey dancing, put it in my crypto coin, and nobody else can see that picture but you. But you have to give me money.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, one of the things I've realized in the last 5 or 10 years is that we programmers, as a class, not all, most of us are not like this, but dang, we kind of are a bunch of bullshitting people. We figured out, and Zuckerberg and a lot of others are like this, we figured out that we can get a lot of money by doing various technical things. And it's been a real fun ride so far.
It's not over yet.
It's not over yet. We need
not
to
over yet.
Get on the next bandwagon. So, what about, that's cryptocurrency. I've watched this, oh my God, it was a movie that series on Netflix. Basically, a man was accused of murder. He was innocent. And so 8 episodes of him going around to his neighbors and discovering all their secrets and ruining their lives, trying to prove he's innocent. That was the gist of the series.
Okay.
Yeah. It's
okay. He's in a great neighborhood, I guess.
They didn't like him very much at the end. Who'd have thunk? All right, so let me do my goodbye thing here. Hidey-ho, you have wasted yet another hour with Nerd Roundup. We're happy to have you. Come back next week. We'll see you on the internet.